Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast, episode 53. Parker and Matt back with you guys, and we are welcoming back on for the fourth time a very special guest. That's Brian Keller. Matt, Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. I'm like that half-flat third wheel, I guess, right?
Oh.
I get pumped back up, and I get to come back on for a little bit. Yeah.
We need another guest. Pull him out of the closet. Yeah.
Anything new since the last time you've been on?
No, just a lot of work. But beyond that, no, everything is, we are now officially into spring. That's good.
That's right.
But beyond that, just working a lot. So how about you guys?
Man, a lot of sickness, a lot of, family stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on, and, that happens in life where you kind of have to make those adjustments. So on my end, I'm coming hopefully through sickness and travel, and I think I had a funeral to go to, if I remember right. So I've had several, we've missed several weeks, so I apologize, guys. We've been missing some shows because I have been out, so.
Well, there's a reason for that, but you're getting through it, and mm-hmm. you look good, so.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's taking too much of a toll on you. I mean, yeah. You look good.
Well, it was funny because before this show, there was a comment. We were having this open discussion. I think it was before you got here, and it was with one of our members. And they were, and I just kind of chuckled under my breath. And we were talking about how a gym club, to be unmentioned, started having a bunch of fat trainers. So it's like, why? How could you have unhealthy trainers?
Right.
And I was thinking, well, I'm the fattest trainer we have, so. But outside of that, I'm feeling pretty good.
I'd say you're far from fat, Matt. You're not a fat Matt, that's for sure.
Being the fattest trainer here still means you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
We've got some in-shape trainers here at Anytime Fitness.
We do. Very in shape.
He just has a little extra, he's putting that extra weight on so he can bulk up and then lean it out a bit. So
it's called fat power.
Fat power. Yeah. Okay. Fat power. Nice.
All right, guys, time for the Fit Focus. Do you guys know anything about the American Heart Association?
Well, I know what it is, yes, but I'm sure you're getting ready to tell us some interesting information regarding.
Well, can you believe that the Texas Senate proposed Bill 379, and what that bill was going to do, it was going to make it make foods such as soda, ultra-processed desserts, candy, things like that, be removed from the list of items that are eligible from SNAP food stamp benefits. And lobbying against this bill was the American Heart Association.
Go figure.
They thought it was a bad idea to remove these ultra-processed and sodas and candies from food stamp benefits. And when they got called out on it and they got some press about it, they said, oops, actually, never mind. We made a mistake, and now we're actually for the bill.
Yeah. So, and just as recently, 2 days ago, they retracted their statement because this actually came out early March, right? And they've been in opposition to it for at least, I'm trying to think how far back this goes, but part of February going into early March, how they were talking against removing junk food from schools. Which
from food stamps?
Well, was it from food stamps? Mm-hmm. I thought it was from schools. Okay, so from food stamps, and it's just, I mean, I was like, I had to send this to Parker because I was like, are we serious?
Well, if you're gonna get free food from the government or at a discounted rate for food stamps, I completely agree that you should not be allowed. I mean, I already know that a couple of the restrictions are you can't buy cigarettes, you can't buy alcohol. So you shouldn't be allowed to buy junk food. If you're getting it given to you, to me, it should be of extreme health benefit. It should have a lot of health benefits to it.
Well, you would especially think that the American Heart Association, which is concerned is the heart health of Americans, would agree with that.
Well, so here's, have you guys noticed, let's throw this out here. The American Heart Association is, whether it's, is it a government entity? Or if not, it seems like it might be or it should be. I mean, it's a very big association.
I'm sure they've got some government funds.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. Whether it's governmental or whether it's an association that's supposed to be highly knowledgeable of its kind for the benefit of Americans, in associations such as the American Heart Association, have you not ever noticed here, especially over the last few years, they like to take things and throw it out to the general public and see if it'll stick or not, and then they realize that the American public is not for it? Like, just for instance, they wanted to fight against the health benefits or fighting against pulling the junk food out. And then when they realize that there's backlash, they go, oh, sorry, our mistake. And they pull it back because they realize that the American public is not for it. But they tend to do this. They push that envelope constantly. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but it's a constant push to see what they're going to get away with. And if they're not going to get away with it, they'll retract it. But if they're going to get away with it, they're going to continue to push that as far as they can push it.
Well, I think if they would have stayed under the radar, they would have kept pushing against it. I found the quote from one of their officials at the, I think it's in the Senate or where they were lobbying, at the Capitol, sorry. And he goes, while improving Texans' diet is a shared goal, the Heart Association is concerned about the potential impacts of this bill on participation in population health. Okay. He goes on and says, policies intended to reduce obesity should be focused on the population as a whole rather than singling out SNAP participants. While we know that SNAP is meant to be a supplement, healthy fruits and vegetables remain out of reach for many, and this will not change until the benefit adequacy is addressed. Excuse me. So, you know, that is a bunch of mumbo jumbo saying that, well, since some people don't have access to healthy foods, then we should allow them to eat junk food is pretty much their stance.
Well, it could also be not have access, but they have access, but it's too highly priced for them and they can't afford it. That's why they put all that junk food so cheaply priced, is so it makes it so easy for them to attain. So cheaply priced.
That might have been true. No, I don't buy junk food, but that might have been true couple of years ago. Is that still true, though? I mean, processed food has gone through the roof.
Well, but I think also, I don't think that, but to me personally, I don't think that eating healthy is, you know, if you want to get organic, yes, it might go up. But if you're going to go to the stores and get fruits and vegetables at any of the grocery stores, which still might be genetically modified, a lot of people don't necessarily know that. But let's say there's fruit and vegetables there, I think you'd still get it at a reasonable price where they should be able to afford it. But there are some, you know, they make it so easy to get on the junk food. That's why they have all that junk food sitting at the front of the counter whenever you're checking out, and they have a certain layout of the stores to direct you. That I think it just makes it, maybe the price of that has gone up, but it still makes a lot of people, I don't know, I guess maybe with the stuff they put in it, it makes them want it more. I guess
100%.
Yeah. I think the thing that this shows is who really controls the American Heart Association. It's very logical and even common sense at this point to understand that junk food is not good for the heart. That's pretty obvious.
Right.
And the fact that the American Heart Association would come out in opposition of that initially tells me that the people pulling the strings at the American Heart Association don't really care about heart health.
No.
And more than likely, it's some of these junk food manufacturers that are funding the American Heart Association and paying them to say things like this. Because if the American Heart Association comes out and says you shouldn't have junk food, or they support a bill that removes junk food from food stamp benefits, then the junk food companies are going to lose sales.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to make less money. So if you're the junk food company, you say, hey, nobody will want to eat us if they know actually how unhealthy we are or eat our food. So what we're going to do is we're going to pay off different entities to say that we're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that way people will keep buying our food. I mean, that's what it boils down to, in my opinion.
I take that a step further and say those might be the companies doing it, but who's behind those companies? Somebody like a USAID or an entity within the government that, you know, because as it's coming, it's starting to come up more and more that a lot of these funds were funneled, they were laundered, going into shell companies and then through NGOs and getting passed around and dispersed. It would not surprise me as if you were to take that, and let's say you picked a junk food company and you saw that they donated to the American, they lobbied for the American Heart Association to go against that. Find out where they got that money, that junk food company. Yeah, I think it's just, that's scratching the surface in my personal opinion. I think it goes way beyond that.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things we're learning is that I did a chart at home over the weekend. I just watched a series called The President's Men, and this is kind of quasi-connected. And The President's Men is something that the Tucker Carlson Network put out, and it's talking about how each one of the President's Men was taken down more over the 2016 election or after he was elected. And what that exposed how government works with associations and how it works with governments and how it works with television. And then what Elon Musk has just done when he's finding all this money. And what we have uncovered is a global network of propaganda. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, for example, it's not this, the USAID, which I think USAID was probably one of the biggest contributors, but you have a government organization. They send money to either some country. The country has now understands they're under the payroll of the politicians. Mm-hmm. That when they want something from that country, they will do it, right? And then that money goes there, and then they got that country or officials that receive that money send millions and sometimes more than half the money back to the states, and it goes in certain people's pockets, mm-hmm. i.e. government officials, senators, House representatives, mm-hmm. Governors. And so this kickback is happening all the time. And not only to them, but also to that they have DEI programs that are called DEI, mm-hmm. but they're massive amounts of money that very little goes to DEI, but it goes to support the propaganda, support the machine. So you have associations, governments, media, Hollywood, colleges, all under the take, mm-hmm. all saying the same damn thing. Being paid by our tax dollars, okay? So this machine, where like when you have the American Heart Association pushing an agenda, they're getting money to do this, mm-hmm. okay? All these associations, they stay alive. Think about how many times we've heard that New York Times is going under. For 25 years, I heard they're broke. But somehow they keep printing because we're keeping them open with our money. That's how they stay open.
Involuntarily.
Funding our own propaganda.
Yeah.
100%.
Against ourselves.
Yes. Against ourselves.
Against ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think why do you think everyone in the Department of Education is up in arms?
Yeah.
I mean, we've spent, the total the other day I saw, since 1979, I think, when it came up, we've spent like billions or trillions of dollars since 79, and the United States math, reading, and let's see, it's math scores, reading scores, and there was one other one, have all declined since 79. They have, we've pumped in that kind of money, and they've declined. They have not stayed, they haven't even stayed consistent, let alone going up.
Yeah, because it's because the it's not about helping the kids.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not. And it goes back and forth with all of that money laundering. So that's, yes, I think the American Heart Association is just one of those entities that is like what Parker said, pushing an agenda to where they want to, you know, they're getting the backing from all the junk food companies. Which, by the way, how many of those do you think there are?
Well, there's not as many as you think, because they're all So there's a bunch of different brands. Have you ever seen the charts before where it's got all the different brands, hundreds of brands, and it's they all like funnel up to like the same three or four big companies?
Isn't it like Mars is the major one?
You have Unilever. You have, I thought Mars was under Unilever. I could be wrong, but you have Unilever.
Nestle
is another one. What are the other ones? Nestle, Unilever.
There's a couple others, but yeah. So all those brands, you go in the store and you walk down the aisle and it's this brand, that brand, that brand. Hundreds of brands. Mm-hmm. Understand that that all flows back to the same three or four big corporations.
Well, and if you get into just one of those corporations, you have a massive percentage of the population if you want to influence them in a certain way. So that's when these corporations, these associations, these entities, that when they have the power to influence millions or hundreds of millions of people, instantaneously, they become a target and they start getting money to push a message.
Well, so, all right, you know, you have maybe three or four major companies that it really only boils down to one or two companies that owns everything. That's BlackRock and somebody else. So BlackRock has the funds, so if they want
Vanguard.
If they want to push a message, by God, they're going to do it. I mean, they have the trillions of dollars. I mean, they own half the world, if not more. They're going to push that agenda if they want to push it a certain direction, and they don't have a problem throwing that little bit of money because that's not much money to them.
Yeah,
they'll throw it out there.
I'm still surprised that Trump is standing vertical right now. He's going up against some major power.
Yeah, well, and he's going about it the right way.
Yes.
Definitely going about it the right way.
Well, let's transition now into our main topic of the day. A topic that Brian said he wanted to talk about when he was coming on the podcast. Brian, you want to introduce what we're talking about today?
Well, before you do this, this is something that me and Parker have talked many times without doing this research.
Okay.
And I've always said that you never really needed gyms until after the Industrial Revolution. We all started sitting down to do our work.
Right.
So I'm wondering if this plays into it a little bit.
Well, and I was hopeful that because I have been quite busy on my own with work and it's eaten up a lot of my time, I was hoping that you had done a little bit of research on your own. If not, I still have some points here that we can discuss today.
100%.
So I thought it'd be a fun idea because you guys have the podcast Loading the Bar, and like you've mentioned, it's a fitness lifestyle, not only for fitness here at the gym, but it also kind of expands into meal planning and eating correct. So we all three know that they're hand in hand. You can't have really one without the other and succeed very well.
Right.
You have to have both. But we're going to discuss the creation of the gym today, mm-hmm. on how it came about. And some of the first information that I had found regarding was the gym has actually been around. Do you guys want to, if you already know, I'll let you say it, but do you guys have any guesses as to the research I found? I'll let you know if I'm right there with you. Do you know how long the gym has actually been around?
Well, the concept of working out or... like gym.
Like a gym itself.
Well, so it started off with the term gymnasium or gymnasia, I guess. So then it probably would be not necessarily a brick and mortar type building. It would be probably the concept of working out at that point.
Because doesn't that go back to like the Colosseum and like.
Yeah, but that was for
Roman athletes and stuff.
That was for athletes and stuff.
Right, but that's still. Yeah. But that's the basis, and it goes back to
exercising and like working out.
Yeah, 3,000 years.
Building, you know, little gladiators, and they like, you know, get real strong.
Yeah, no, I get that.
So the Greeks and the Romans, right? So here's. So the basis of the word gymnasium or gym is it's derived from the word gymnos, which to me sounds Greek
or Latin.
Meaning naked. So if you think about it, the original, back in the day, when the Greeks and the Romans were in those Colosseums and they were doing the doing everything, the games they played, they were all naked. So could you imagine in today's setting letting all your business out for the world to see while you're working out? I just don't see that. I just could not fathom that happening. But then, I mean, back in the day, they didn't even have a cloth over anything. They didn't cover themselves. They were completely naked when it first started.
Mm.
So doing all the events that they did, whatever it was,
uh-huh.
they were completely naked, is how it started.
So we're talking about that this started in ancient Rome or maybe Greece?
Probably so, yes. One, I would guess one or both, yes.
But was for the training of their athletes. But that they didn't necessarily have a gym. I'm sure it was just kind of like they just kind of...
They found things to lift, like stones. And mm-hmm. I mean, really not that much different. We put weights on a bar, chunks of iron on a bar. It's not that much different than... It's just more modern version of just lifting rocks and heavy things.
Medicine
balls
and stuff like that are weighted. I'm sure that this did it with rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so here's what it says: gymnos, meaning naked. The word gymnasium comes from the Greek word gymnos, meaning naked, as athletes trained in the nude, emphasizing the importance of the human form.
Uh oh.
A nude gym. Now that's a novel concept. Maybe we're onto something here.
When Jeff gets here tomorrow, we'll tell him what we need to start doing at the gym. Check your clothes in at the door, please.
No shoes, no shirt, all service. Yes, you get to be serviced here.
That is a very interesting fact and very surprising. That's new.
So here's another one right here. For the ancient roots, it's gymnasiums in ancient Greece. So it did start in Greece. Okay. Gymnasiums as centers of training. In ancient Greece, gymnasiums were important spaces for training, education, and philosophical discourse. They were public institutions where male athletes received training for public games.
Okay, so only kinda athletes used them.
Sounds a little bit like... Olympics.
In a way.
That's how the Olympics kind of started. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the best of the best top athletes trained to be able to do events at a very high level, certain athletic activities, lift a high amount of weight, run really fast.
Well, so basically if you look around us, you guys see all the equipment in here, right?
Right.
So it's completely evolved from back then, but the equipment and the training that they had then, it says gymnasiums included running tracks, open courtyards, and other exercise apparatuses.
Okay.
Doesn't sound that much different.
Well, the apparatuses, so some of these pictures, like I've seen on some of this article stuff, they showed like almost like, it looked like a lot of gymnastics, like doing like the parallel bars or the pommel horse or just different things like that. Like if you look here in this picture here, there's a set of parallel bars. I mean, you just do, different things. And of course, the weights were a lot different back back in the day. But and obviously before they had the means to sculpt metal into the way these are sculpted for the kettlebells and the dumbbells, they probably used heavy stones and pieces of iron, I'm guessing, if they had it. But it's just amazing that while we're looking at a lot of these things going, I bet that's more something that's new. It's really not. It's actually, the base has really been around for thousands of years.
It's just kind of reinvented, and refined.
Right.
So I just looked up, when did dumbbells come about? Like,
isn't there like a speck over there on the wall?
Oh, yeah.
The original design of the dumbbell?
Yeah. I don't know if I've stopped and looked at that. But it says that the earliest forms of weight training were traced back to Greece and Rome, where stones and heavy objects were used as strength training. It doesn't say... During the Middle Ages, simple weights made from metal or stone were utilized by individuals for physical conditioning. These early versions of dumbbells weren't standardized, but served similar purposes. By the 18th century, dumbbell originated in England during the 18th century. It's believed that it was coined to describe the type of weight used for exercise without the noise associated with bells. Used in, bells that would be in a church or something. These early dumbbells were typically made of iron and had no handles, resembling a bell, but without its clapper.
It's like kettlebells.
Yeah, I guess.
It's kind of a similar concept.
Okay.
Interesting. I'd almost want to see a picture of that. And it says, by the 19th century, dumbbells evolved during this period and were more commonly found in gyms and fitness clubs. They began to take on various shapes and designs, and some featured adjustable weights or handles to make them easier to use. So, you can see where we are now. Because those years was the Was Greece using dumbbells? So it sounds like they didn't really come along really into their current form until the beginning around the 18th century.
Right. Well, and so this says, before we get into the more of the modern gym, this says the importance of gymnastics and health. Gymnastics was considered an important part of education, with the connection between gymnastics and health being pointed out by sophist Prodicus and later improved by Hippocrates.
And interesting.
Then the development of the modern gym, Friedrich Jahn, J-A-H-N, and the Turnplatz. In the 19th century, German educator Friedrich Jahn founded the Turnplatz, an outdoor space for gymnastics, which later became the Turners, a political and gymnastic movement.
Hmm. And that was in the 19th century?
That was in the 19th century. So part of the 19th century, the United States had their first public gym, and do you want to know when that opened?
1876.
Hold on. Now I got to give my guess. I'm going to say 1910.
No, we said the 19th century.
Oh, sorry.
try it again.
I always forget that. I'm going to say 1850.
Believe it or not, it was 1827.
Wow. It said I was thinking like post Civil War, but yeah. Right, this was even pre Civil War.
Oh yeah, by 35 years or 34 years. This says John Neal of Portland, Maine, opened the first public gym in the United States based on John's model in 1827.
Wow.
Could you imagine? I mean, you see the pictures of the way people looked and the way they dressed and the way they like wore their hair and stuff back then, and then you can imagine those same people in a gym working out.
Right.
That'd be kind of funny.
Well, so there was also the commercial gyms emerge as well, and it says Hippolyte Triat, a French gymnast and strongman, is credited with opening the first commercial gym in Brussels in the late 1840s. Followed by a second one in Paris.
This goes back a lot further than I really expected.
Yeah, when I started 100%. Printing this off and reading all this, me too. I was not expecting it to be in the 19th century for sure. I was expecting maybe early 20th century.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. We had talked about it before, and that's kind of what we assumed was, you know, after the Industrial Revolution, people started moving into cities and working more stationary
when
jobs.
Does it say anything in there about when gyms became more for the working man?
Not that I saw, no. I mean, not necessarily for the working man. I'm sure you could
not
probably,
just for athletes, you know.
Right. Well, so, you know, you could probably find an article on the history of the health clubs and how they've evolved, which would probably lead you through a little bit of that. While you're looking up something here, Matt, any ideas you guys on when the YMCA first had their
I was
first
just
one?
About to Google that on my phone because I was thinking, you know, in terms of like modern health clubs, that's one of the originals we think about.
Yeah,
YMCA first club opened. Is that what the question is?
So it says the YMCA in Boston is believed to have hosted one of the U.S.'s first multiple purpose gyms in what year?
1908.
Yeah, I would say sometime in the right after the turn of the century.
1850.
Wow.
What?
YMCA's been around for that long?
Almost 200 years. Yep. 175 years.
Come on.
Yeah. 1850.
What?
Well, so when you go to the one, you know, if I remember right, when I had a membership at the Y, I'd go to the one downtown off of Broadway. Just a block off of Broadway. I think it was on Washington, if I remember right. And it was in an old building. But they always have different things up about the Y. And I think it wasn't that one, but the one off of 39th, I think it was in Independence, 39th and Nolan, there was one that we used to play racquetball there all the time. And I think they had something up about when the first YMCA was started. And so, yeah, it's in the 19th century, 1850.
So I looked that up because I was very curious about it, and surprisingly, NASM has some sources on this, but it's talking about when the working class became more someone like everyday Joes would come in and actually use the gym, because it says that, you know, before the 1900s, fitness facilities were often more elite athletes would use it. When it used for the fluent or, you know, specific athletes or bodybuilders. You know, many of the clubs were private before, you know, there wasn't like open gyms and stuff like there is today.
Well, to me, I guess it was maybe geared towards the people with the money, too.
Yes. Yeah. The affluent. Yeah. 100%. Oh, yeah. And then it said after World War II, there was a significant shift in societal attitudes towards health and fitness among general population. As soldiers returned home, there was growing awareness about maintaining physical fitness as a part of healthy lifestyle. This period saw an increase in leisure time for the working class individuals due to economic expansions. And then in the 60s, that's when the fitness revolution kind of exploded. The rise of health consciousness, promoting physical fitness. This is interesting because it's saying in the 60s and then the 70s and 80s was a big boom in fitness, which is pretty interesting because the health just got worse. From about the 1960s on, the health got worse and worse and worse and worse. And, of course, that is also the advent. After the war, you also had the advent of the grocery stores, right?
They really started taking off to and started bringing in a heck of a lot more things than just groceries, I would say. I mean, you know, junk food is what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean
the invention of all.
Well, I think the grocery store became necessary for the advent of processing, right? Yeah. The ability for food to sit longer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you have all these gyms, but what we know right now, only 30% of the population goes, right? And the country is really, especially in America, is really fat, mm-hmm. right? So the rise of gyms and the rise of unhealthy individuals has, I mean, people die of things they never died of 100 years ago. So that's very interesting. And I'm not sure I buy that, you know, it was just, I wouldn't want to dive deeper into this issue, because I'm not sure it's strictly because people found leisure time and they wanted to go work out and be fit, and they found the importance of the physical fitness after the war.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Let's break that down a little bit and think about some of the other factors that could play into that timeline. So originally you mentioned the affluent populations being popularized first there.
Yeah.
Why might an affluent population feel a need for recreational exercise?
Because they have an image to maintain.
Yes, that's part of it. And because back in that time, the affluent populations were the ones with a much easier access to food, right? Because think about it. If you were just a poor man living out on a small farm and you wanted food, you'd have to grow it yourself. So you had to work to grow the food and then eat it. I mean, you're not going to get very fat doing that. Affluent populations that have a lot of money are not working, but they have a lot of access to food and good quality food, tasty food.
Yeah.
So they are a lot more likely to be the ones who get overweight and thus need the exercise.
Yeah.
Right? So that's probably part of the reason why it started out that way. Mm-hmm. You come back from World War II. You know, you mentioned that's when it expands into the regular population. Well, think about the economic boom after World War II.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, access to food maybe becomes much easier because the economy's good. People have more money. They're, you know, eating more foods. Plus, processed foods are starting to come into the picture. So they're starting to find themselves more unhealthy and in more of a need for recreational activity as well. And then that just continues on. And it's like as processed food becomes more and more popular, so does exercise to try to keep up with it. But it's like a dog chasing its tail. And like our fitness, our exercise has never been able to keep up with how just crappy our diets and our food in this country has become.
You know, I'll see if I can find something while we're talking here. I guess that sounds, I mean, that's a good analysis. Where I have an issue is, and it could be right, in our own little microcosm of training people. People come in, they're all gung-ho, they want to start training because they realize they need it, And how many people we know that they flake out, right? They don't stay with it.
A good portion of them.
Good portion of them. So that could be at a mass scale why we only have 30% that attend the gyms. And I don't know what makes up that 30%.
I don't think it's even 30%.
It might not.
When you said that earlier, I was thinking, that seems high.
Yeah.
Maybe 30% that carry some sort of like fitness membership.
Yeah.
But you know how the attendance rates are so low on
yes.
gym memberships. You'd be lucky to say 10% of people go to the gym regularly.
Well, and that's true. If you think about most gyms, and even our gym, there's that a lot of people carry the membership because it just feels good that they feel like they're doing something carrying the membership, but they don't actually come.
Well, so I was thinking of this more based on the 30% of maybe 30% of the population go to the gym, but my question or maybe my interest would be, what's the direct correlation or what's the you know, when you have, let's say, 30% that actually do have gym memberships, over the last, 30, 40 years, our obesity level in this country has risen. So you would think that with the certain amount of gym memberships, that would help to combat or offset the obesity level in our country, but yet it doesn't. So I wonder what that correlation is, because obviously the obesity level has, to me, a direct correlation with all the junk food that they're putting out there.
Well, okay, so let's just assume for the sake of argument that the 30% figure is accurate, and 30% of people do go to the gym on a regular basis. What's the obesity rate in this country?
That I don't know, but I would think that it's pretty high. In the United States, it's higher than in the United States than it is in any other country.
I mean, 50%? I don't know.
Ooh,
is it 30%?
To me, 50 sounds high, but it could be every bit of 50.
My point being that the 30% of people, if 30% of the people go to the gyms, that's the 30% that's not obese, you know? Or it's possible that we have just two extremes, right? It used to be everybody was pretty healthy, pretty in shape. Nobody was really overweight, but also nobody used commercial gyms.
Right.
And we've just been growing apart where you have a portion of the population, let's say 30% are obese. Those people are not using the gym, but they're becoming more and more obese. But then you have the people on this other side that are using the gyms. They're the ones staying healthy. So as a country, the one extreme is becoming worse, which is our health.
Right, right.
But then you have the people who are actually taking care of their health and conscious of it that are actually becoming healthier, living longer, able to be healthy and active much more later into their lives because they are concerned about this stuff. So it's kind of like, yes, you can if you just follow, you know, buy junk food, don't ever exercise, sedentary lifestyle. Yeah, you're going to be extremely unhealthy. You're going to be overweight, obese. But then if you really do care about yourself, you go to the gym consistently, you eat healthy, you could live very long life, very healthy. And so it's possible that those two don't intersect.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And I'd take that a step further and wonder how many of the people that are considered to be obese have started getting into the gym to help correct that.
And that doesn't necessarily show up in the data yet because you have somebody who may eventually not be obese, but they are still because they're just now starting.
Right, but you know, just taking those first steps, and it does take a while. And I would argue that, as we all know, when you're in the gym, it usually takes 3 weeks to get past all that soreness. And when you're heavier than you want to be and you're out of shape, a lot of people don't have the brain power, or they have the brain power, they don't want to use it and push themselves beyond that soreness, because when they come in and they're like, you know, I'm tired of feeling this way, so I'm going to get in and go to the gym. They come in all gung-ho and really push themselves, maybe even harder than they should have to start, and they're like, I can't move. And then they don't want to come back because it's a vicious cycle. But for the ones that are not in shape, that are obese, that actually come in and really start pushing themselves, I would be curious to find out what that would be.
Well, I think me and Parker face this all the time. It's like every time I have a new client, I day one, we're conditioning them that this is a lifestyle and that your approach to this needs to be elongated over life, not, hey, in 1 month I'm going to look like this.
Correct.
Right?
That's unrealistic.
Yeah. And so I'm every day, every client I have, I'm constantly talking about everything, you know, from nutrition to results in the gym, and to reach their goals, as in milestone moments, you know, as we get there, right? Mm-hmm. I said, stop worrying about getting there. So let's just worry about investing in today.
Well, and enjoy the process.
Yeah, 100%. So I looked up something here about what Parker just said, and that is, what's that 30%, right? Is that 30% that go to the gym, or is that 30% that just has a membership? And you're right, it's 30% that has some form of a membership, right? So the next question is how many of that 30%? Well, actually, I just realized it was in the 2000s that it hit 30%. After COVID, it dropped down to...
Did it cut in half?
It dropped down below 30. It's like 20 to 25.
But that's still a big drop.
Okay, do you know what I just looked up?
What?
What percentage of people with gym memberships never go to the gym? You know what that percentage is?
What's that?
67%.
Wow.
So two-thirds of people don't even go. So if 30% have a gym membership and two-thirds of them don't go, then that leaves 10% of people that go
to the gym. Okay. A competing gym, I think, don't they have a membership that's like $10 a month?
Yes.
So that's where I think that comes in, because they're like, it's just $10. So if they're gonna miss a week, or they're not paying very much for their membership, it's easier for them just to keep it on their card and go, you know, it's too much hassle to go ahead and cancel this. It's just $10 a month. I'll get back in next month. And they push it down the road. They kick the can down the road, so to speak, and they train themselves to justify why they're missing and how easy it is.
I think we can mention that gym.
Well, Planet Fitness was started as a business, not as a gym.
Yeah.
It was these two guys who had no experience in fitness or gym industry. Their experience was in marketing. And they hypothesized that people would sign up for a very cheap gym membership.
Which they were right.
That wouldn't come to the gym and would never use it. And so they thought, well, we can drop the price really low, but then sell way more memberships, mm-hmm. and people won't ever come, and so the gym still won't be too full. And that's what you see happen. I think the average, maybe not the average, but at least I know some of the top Planet Fitnesses have over 10,000 members.
But I think they nailed that marketing right on the money. I think they nailed it.
Well, it's not so much the marketing, it's the strategy.
Well, okay, their strategy, right. I think, worked. They
understood the human condition.
Right.
That and the time that people feel good. It's something I mentioned earlier, is that people feel good about having the membership. It's like, I will get started. I'll have it this month, but I'll start next month. And it goes on and on and on. I just talked to, this was probably, I did a analysis of our members here at Anytime Fitness and Lee Summit. And one of the things that I, one of the people I talked to was a guy who does emotional resonance studies. And one of the things he said was that he had, and this is a guy who does analysis of companies in their target markets, and he said that he had a membership that he held on for a year and a half, never went, not one time, but he kept thinking, I will go, I don't want to cancel yet, but I will go, never went. And this is what Planet Fitness's founders figured out. So, you know, and this is something that it goes against me and Parker's, and I'm sure your belief. Are we here to make money, or are we here to actually help people, right? And I find it, frankly, deplorable that you set up a business model that you just aren't, you know, you plan on people not using. You're not getting them in there.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, Planet Fitness says it's for the, you know, but I think it's a big facade just to make a lot of money. And so, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's true. Every gym's going to have some unused memberships, but we try to create a lot of value here to get people in the door. right? And so I think it's, if you're setting a system up just for people to make money, you know, and you're not helping people, and it's something that runs against my grain. So,
well, I will tell you, as a person that it took me a while to, so when I got to my heaviest point, I hadn't been in the gym in a few years, and it was just because my work schedule was just super crazy. I was constantly working, and I just let myself go, and I ended up, everyone reaches their spot before, and some, it takes longer than others to hit that spot. Well, my spot was my wife. Before we were married, she had just made a comment that it was, "My honey, you're starting to put on some weight," and she was just kind of joking about it. But she, I mean, because she loved me obviously for who I was, but she noticed and she knew I wasn't feeling good about myself because she would ask, "When are you going to get in the gym?" And I was like, "I'm going to get there," because I've worked out all my life. I knew what it was. I just wasn't ready to physically and mentally go through that starting back up phase. Mm-hmm. Well, after she finally, when I told her, yeah, I'm going to get there, after I told her, I always tell her that was the catalyst for me getting back in the gym, was that comment. Mm-hmm. And it finally got me up off the couch, so to speak, to get back in and to do that. So when, you know, this is part of the evolution of gyms, is that I would say as a microcosm maybe of it, just in a different form, for the Planet Fitness, on how their business model works, is that they're hoping that people don't come into the gym so they can continue to get more and more people to show up or to pay for, you know, keeping the lights on and things, but they don't want people in. And I think when, right, I say evolution, I think that's the evolution of the gym on the business side. I mean, there are so many different ways that the gym has evolved with,
right,
multiple equipment of just different things to offer, whether it's a Zumba class, whether it's treadmills, stair steppers, whether it's all the equipment. It's just, the gym has completely transformed itself over the years, and it seems like it just keeps fine tuning and getting better. But what you two do, not all gyms have, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do have trainers, you know, like the City of Lee Summit, where I work out sometimes, is the Legacy and Longview. They have trainers that work there. I don't know how much they get extra for having, because I see them with personal clients, so I don't know if the city's paying them extra or if that's just part of their hourly rate for working there to help people or not. But
right,
I see that they are trying to help people, but I also just, they don't seem vested. You guys, right, I know you. You guys are vested, and you are... Not only are you trying to work the individual out, you're trying to get them to change their habits.
Yeah.
You're trying to get them to create new habits where they actually get rid of their old or minimize their old, and they retrain themselves, and they know that they have a support system when they come here, because you're going to hold their feet to the fire, and you're going to ask them, well, what'd you eat last night? Or how did you eat? Or how much sleep did you get? How you feeling? More gyms really need that, I think, for the evolution of the gym to really thrive and get better. I think they need more evolution in this way.
Yeah.
I would agree. You know, how do you, it's kind of, you ever heard the saying, how do you eat elephant?
I have one very bite, slowly, one bite at a time,
right? Yeah. How do we fix this problem of this country that's so unhealthy and so overweight? One person at a time, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody comes in, you know, to see me or Matt first day, you know, we start them slow. We teach them the movements, the form, how to work out. We teach them how to eat, what to eat, mm-hmm, you know, the habits that they should be using throughout their day. That's a months-long process. Mm-hmm. And there are people that we've trained for years who they know it. They know how to do it themselves. They know how to work out themselves. They still like come back and seeing us. But ultimately, the goal is like... Eventually, you get to that point where you can do it yourself. You've got the lifestyle, you're locked in, you know how to work out, you know how to eat, and you're kind of just on autopilot, right? And that's a person that's went from unhealthy to healthy now, and they're going to be healthy the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And you know, every time we see a new person, it's taking them on that journey and getting them to that point where they're just set up for life. They've got the tools in their toolbox. No matter where they go, what they do, they are able to stay healthy. They're able to stay in shape. They know how to exercise. They know how to eat. And if we can do that to every person in this country, then we would be a much healthier country. All these junk food businesses would cease to exist. They would go bankrupt. Yeah. Right? 'Cause nobody would buy the food.
Yeah.
But that's all we can do is just one person at a time.
Well, and you've heard the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. You are setting the you're giving them the plan to succeed. You're setting up the template, and they need to, once you're giving them the template, it's theirs to take and run with it and to create their own end goal out of mm-hmm. that. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, you could lay out the best plan, but if someone's not willing to put in the work, they're not going to see the result, and they're going to take what you have put together as a wonderful plan, and it's going to come short. Or come up short. They're just not going to utilize it to the fullest of what it's meant to be, and they're going to fall short, and then they're going to feel like maybe it's not for them again. Mm-hmm. It's so much more mental than it is. I mean, it's just as much mental as it is physical, really. You have to just stay with it, and you have to understand that it is a lifestyle.
Well, and that's one of the things I haven't talked to Parker about this, but one of the things I've started doing with all my clients that, especially new ones, is that I said, do you have the support structure? You're going to have it at the gym. Do you have it at home? Do you have friends that support you? Because you have friends that get in the way of this, it's going to make it hard, right?
That's an excellent point.
You know, because I've found that friends and family can get in the way, right? They can be your deterrent. They can be your what derails you. So at the very least, I want them to start thinking about that. Do you have the support structure when you leave this gym for you to maintain your nutrition, for you to live this new healthy lifestyle? Because it's very, very, very important. Because this isn't easy. I talk to both me and Parker have clients who have been very successful that are in great physical condition. They're like testaments to.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was kidding. You threw it up, so I thought I'd hit it.
Yeah, that's right. It's good. But they're, you know, testaments to what we've done as in they put in the work, but I always kind of remind them as they go through is like, you know, sometimes I'll hear like, you know, I'm going on a 2 week vacation, 3 week vacation, or I just had this conversation the other day. Someone's going to be gone a month. Yeah. And I said, well, I want to remind you all the thousands of hours you've put in to look the way you do, to feel the way you do, and how if you were to let it go, you know, for too long, it's not like you can't get it back, right? But just put some time in the gym here and there and make sure you're conscious about what you're eating, because too many thousands of hours have been put into this gym for you to maintain that, and you just don't want to make it too difficult for yourself when you come back. And so when you remind them of all the hard work they put in, you know, it kind of like reinforces, like, you know, this is the way you live now, right?
Sure. Yeah. So. Well, I mean, a month, you know, taking a week off is one thing. If you start taking 2 weeks off, then that's going to make it a little more difficult for them when they come back. But they take a month off, yeah, they're going to take basically everything that they worked for and just throw it out the window.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say, you know, I'd say it. You can get back pretty quick.
But it's going to be very difficult after a month off to come back. And I mean, you can, yes, but yeah, you're going to be losing quite a bit of what you've gained.
I think what the chance of losing is more the mental fortitude.
That's right. Falling out of the habit,
yeah,
is the problem. Yeah. A month is not going to completely destroy everything, but the worry is that the habit goes away. You don't really get back into it when you get back. Like you said, you come back in the day and you're like, oh, this is a lot harder than it used to be. So then you skip, and then it snowballs.
Yeah.
That's what my main thing with people going on vacations or taking time off is always you have to have a hard stop, right? If it's a week, then it's a week. Mm-hmm. And you are committed to getting right back on everything after that week, or if it's 2 weeks, you know, after 2 weeks. And, you know, doing your best while you're while you're on the vacation. But that's what you have to do, is have that limit for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
We always work out when we go on vacation, if we can. I mean, we always try to make sure we're in every morning.
You guys are really good about that. And one of the only, you know, I may have had somebody else ask me about workouts for them being out of town at some point. But I know for you, every time that you've been gone since I've started training you, which is like 4 years ago, mm-hmm. every time you're on vacation, you ask me to make you workouts while you're gone.
Yeah.
And not just that, you look up what the gym is where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what equipment they have mm-hmm. beforehand.
It only takes
that's
a little,
like 1%.
It only takes a little research, and but that tells you we have thought of how much the investment in ourselves is. That it means a lot to invest in us to continue to do that. You would be surprised that, well, not necessarily you'd be surprised. In general, when you, let's say you take a vacation for a week and you decide, you know, during the week here, I'm up at 4:15 most mornings. A couple mornings during the week, it's 5:15. So I'm up early. You sleep in, whether it's the 6:30, 7:30, or even 8 while you're on vacation for a week. You get into that habit when you get back, it's extremely difficult to get back up at 4:15 or 5:15, and you have to constantly talk to yourself and pull yourself out of bed to do that, because right. you've gotten used to it for a week, and if you take that and you couple that with not working out for a week and just sleeping in, yeah, when you come back you feel great, but then you've got the double whammy of, well, crap, I missed a week of working out and I slept in, so now I got to get up early again and I got to get back in the gym. So I find it, even if you're just going in to maintain, or if you're only going in for 3 or 4 of the days rather than a full week, you're using that to keep that routine going, and you're moving yourself in a positive direction.
Well, I mean, I could say that, you know, even as a trainer, I speak for myself, because, you know, the last couple of weeks have been a little difficult for me. I've had a lot of stress. And, but I got in 2 workouts this week, and then I got in maybe 3 last week, right? I think that's right. But it was very hard to get them in.
But did it make you feel better once you did?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I wanted to get in more, but right. I just, you know, there are things more important that I had to take care of. Mm-hmm. And, but it's like next week I'm frothing at the mouth. I want to do a 5-day workout, because I'm just like, oh, I wrote a workout. You know, but it's, you know, but what I don't want to do is that you have to realize those times are going to come along, and you don't want it to turn into a vice where you're like, well, I missed a couple of weeks. Why try? Right.
Right.
And sometimes, I think the other thing is that in our minds, my dad used to have a saying, it's never as bad as it seems, right? Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to believe that. Like, I've had periods in my life, like, this is the worst moment in my life, or this is the terrible situation. And as time went along and I got farther away from that situation, I'm like, it wasn't that bad. You know, I was like, we make things so bad in our head, right? And a lot of it's because of what other people might feel a perception of. And I don't know how my dad had that kind of wisdom, but he always would be like, just realize it's not as bad as you think, you know. And I'm like, okay, all right, you know. So, you know, I, like, the last 2 weeks I haven't been able to work out that much, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. And it's like, it's okay. Like, I went and did shoulders the other day, I was like, wow, I was like, felt pretty good today, you know. So I'm not as depleted, or, you know, I've lost that much as I think I have. So, you know, I think we have to just, like, stay the course, be consistent. You know, it's not like every week we're going to be, you know, 5-6 days a week or whatever your goals are. It's about being consistent, and consistent doesn't mean perfect.
Right. Well, and I was going to tell you, Matt, the saying that I have that helps me through that, because it does seem like sometimes things are unbearably difficult and it's horrible. And the saying I shared with you recently by text is, and I've kind of adopted this as mine, oh, it's not so bad. It's, if God's going to bring you to it, he's going to get you through it. So that way it puts perspective on it, that whenever you're faced with adversity, just remember, it's out of your control. It's not within your control. You're facing the adversity for a reason. It's a test, and you're being tested. Yeah. And if he's going to bring you to that test, he's going to get you through that test. But he also wants to see how you're reacting. So you just have to take that in stride. Sometime, whether it's a moment or whatever that might be, just take a big deep breath, close your eyes, relax for a second. Think about it.
Here's my problem, Brian. I always realize that what you're saying way after the event. I'm going through it, this sucks. Right. You know.
But I've tried to adopt that ahead of time. If I'm starting to go through something and I know that it's difficult, there's a reason. I just have to find that reason. I have to understand what that is.
Yeah, it's probably a testament to my faith. I think at times I'm going through the situation and I'm just like, I know what the words are, but I'm not feeling it right now. And then I get to the other side of it. Okay, Lord was there.
Well, and we've kind of gotten off track on talking about 100%. general fitness and well-being, but it ultimately what we've been discussing stems back to the evolution of the gym and gym in general, really.
Well, and I just looked at Planet Fitness's numbers. So,
here we go.
Now this was in. Let me back up here.
How recent are they going
to
give them to you?
That's what I'm trying to find. Trying to find a year. And first, they talk about usage rates in general. Use it, and Parker's right, give or take. Various studies suggest the average, this is across all gyms.
All average Planet Fitness gyms? Or
no,
just
all
gyms.
All gyms.
Okay.
The average usage of memberships is about 18 to 20%.
So a fifth, almost a fifth.
Yeah. 18 to 20% of memberships that people actually use them is 18 to 20%. Now, this is from... IHRSA, International Health Racket and Sports Club Association. Planet Fitness, they have like 17 million members across all locations.
Wow.
I don't know how many gyms that is, but...
that's a lot.
Their average, often around their math, as you mentioned, their average monthly membership is $10 a month. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And they have reported, not a study, so I don't know if this is actually accurate, you know, because you know how they say that, and this is a wide span, they say Planet Fitness says their memberships are 30 to 50% usage. Which I don't know if that's true.
But. I think that's a recipe for failure because they're charging a small amount, and for that small amount, you're getting minimal. You have to go in and write your own workout, or you have to go in and perform it yourself with no help.
I think they accidentally added a zero on those instead of 30 to 50%. It's probably 3 to 5%.
You know, honestly, I would not be all that surprised if it was 3 to 5%.
I'm sure it's not far off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when the club itself is reporting that, I mean, that's from the...
Maybe 10, you know?
Yeah.
But they sell so many memberships to people.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 17 million members.
That's crazy.
I mean, to get that... You said 1,000? You said they sell
10,000
members. 10,000 members?
Yeah.
All right, so 17 million divided by 10,000 members is 1,700 gyms.
It's probably that's about crazy. Right, I guess.
That's nuts. Well, I don't know that there'd be that many in the United States. You could look it up, I guess.
And yeah, I'm looking it up. How many Planet?
That's crazy, though. I mean, 17 million members? That's nuts.
Compared to what, 330 million people in the United States?
Right.
That's a large percentage. That's 5% percent of
about
the...
5%. Almost 5%.
Of the entire population is a member of Planet Fitness.
Yeah. Maybe 4%, because what, 34 million? No. Yeah, 34 million would be about, if there was 34 million versus, or instead of 30 million, it's
just, around 5%.
Yeah, it's a little more than 5%, then, wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, all right, 2,300 Planet Fitnesses. Okay, so 17 million.
Oh, so we said 1,700. We were off. There's 2,300 of them.
A little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more. That's crazy.
Divided by 2,300. That's 7,391 memberships per gym.
Average. Yeah. On average, yeah.
My God.
That's crazy to think about, isn't it?
That's insane.
So they're bringing in, if that holds true, they're bringing in $73,000, $390, whatever that was, a month, just on their memberships alone.
Yeah, yeah.
But what other things, do they offer anything else besides just that $10 membership? Do they have different levels of membership?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Black level, I know. I've heard people say they have the black level,
okay,
which means you can, like, bring a guest and stuff. It's, like, the highest level. I don't know what it costs. But.
Okay. So then that's just averaging, if we were to say that they're averaging the $10 membership of $73,000 a month. That's, I mean, I wonder how many of those higher memberships they have that are just beyond the entry level.
I'm looking up what the operating costs are.
Matt's thinking about opening up a franchise.
Right.
He's saying, wait a minute. These numbers sound pretty good.
I see the dollar sign just floating above his head. I see him.
Let's see.
Matt's like, score. I got this. He's going
to. Oh, they don't. I can't find anything. It's not going to come up. But I know that thinking about this, me and Parker know a little bit about operating costs.
From your research, yeah.
From our research, you know, our previous gym, and I know the operating costs for this gym. So I'm going to guess the operating cost of a gym like that is probably, because, you know, it's a franchise.
Right.
So you have to pay something back to the franchise.
You have your franchise fee, right?
Yeah, your franchise fee, and it's monthly.
Right.
So I'm going to guess if they're making, let's say, an average of $70,000 a month, okay, and they probably have, this is going to sound crazy, I bet their operating costs are $40,000 to $50,000.
I was going to guess that. I was thinking maybe their rent. I mean, you know, those Planet Fitness places are big, right? They have a big.
Now, all the equipment is identical.
Right. But so I was thinking they own the equipment, I'm sure, since it's all identical, unless they have a huge a lease with a discounted rate for it being the same from with a company, which I doubt. I'm sure they own it. But if they have a space like this that they're renting, I don't know. I would think that it's probably a $20,000 a month rent payment, at least.
No, I bet it's. I mean, those gyms are huge.
I think it's 30 or 40. I mean, because if they're only doing 40 to 50, it can't be all of it because you still have to pay for your lights and everything else associated.
Well, I mean,
with
obviously, that. Lease. You know, I'm going to say the average. What you say, the average lease space. I mean, it could vary anywhere from, you know, $16 a square foot to all the way up to $30 a square foot, depending on where you're putting your gym.
Right.
So, and those have got to be, 10,000 or more square feet. I mean, they're massive. You know, so
they're finding a way to make the money they need to make.
What about this concept? I just thought of this concept: a gym that is, you make it very expensive, but then if you use your membership and show up, it gets a lot cheaper.
I like it.
That way you incentivize people to show up.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
a
great idea.
How would you make it cheaper?
Just
showing up.
You'd have to your membership, if you come X amount of times, if you come 20 times in a month, your membership cuts by 50%, something like that.
And then it goes back up the next month if you don't.
Yeah.
It's a variable membership.
Yeah.
Like in here, we have a key fob. Uh-huh. So if you show up, you can look up in the system and see how many times every person has come in every week or every month or whatever. And so you just track it like that.
I would take that a step further and rather than, because if they were to show up and just scan their key fob, turn right in and then leave, they'd have to be here for I'd say 30 minutes minimum.
Yeah. Like
for a visit.
Yeah. You'd have to have some stipulations on it, but just something to motivate people to actually use it and show up. Because think going back to what Matt said about the motivation being to get people healthier and not just to make money, you know, and that way you would have them motivated by their own finances as well.
Right.
I think you just came up with a brilliant idea. I think that needs to be implemented. I mean, what you'd have to do is you'd have to figure, okay, let's say someone comes 30 times in a month. maximum, which would be the maximum. Someone comes 30 times a month, and you still make a profit. And so you know what that is, and then you want to make sure you offer them a price that, you know, they can afford, and make sure there's features and benefits that justify it. So you just have to make sure, because no one's going to come 30 times in a month, okay?
There are people that come to this gym 30 times in a month.
Yes, 100%. I know a couple of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, most people aren't.
I'm usually 6 out of the 7 days a week.
Yeah. So you'd still be 24 times a month? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because on Wednesdays, I usually use that as my stretch day. Monday, Tuesday workout, Wednesday stretch, Thursday, Friday workout, Saturday racquetball.
Hey, I don't see you at this gym 24 times a month.
working on trying to get that back, but yeah.
But yeah,
I'm gonna think on that idea.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
Just have to put some parameters around that on just some different stipulations on how you want to work. I mean, because you do have to have some framework for that, because of you have to kind of think about all the different scenarios or situations or different levels maybe of how you would separate out each level. Okay, well, this level gets you with this many features and benefits. This level gets you here. This level gets you here. I think, yeah. I think it's workable. I think you could do it.
Brian, as somebody who's, like, we're trainers, we think about things a little differently than when it comes to gyms. As somebody, you know, you work out, you don't use an in-person trainer right now, but you did for a long time. Mm-hmm. Would that be something that would motivate you to come more? And you already come anyway, so maybe you're not a good one to ask, but...
No, I think it's actually... I think I am a good one to ask, and here's why. I would much rather be back here because I know that the gym that I'm working out at, up at Legacy in Longview, there's a yearly fee involved membership fee that's less than if I were to have you guys 4-5 days a week like I'm working out. I go there and I work out. You give me the workout, but I still have to do it on my own and I have to push myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to show up here and pay the extra that it takes to have you two as part of my daily routine, I know that I'm going to give everything that I already give and then I'm going to give a little bit more because you're there pushing me and you know that you know you're there to... You want to succeed when I succeed. That's what it's partly. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, because if you're going to go ahead and take the time to invest in me, you're not going to let me fail. You're going to watch me. You already know that my form has been corrected and I know how to do everything right. Now we're going to get down to, all right, I know his goals, my goals. You guys know my goals. You know where I want to be and you know what I want to do. So you're going to figure out a way to get me there. And if that means that you see me in here and I'm not pushing hard enough, you're going to go, ha ha. No, let's step it up. Mm-hmm. We're gonna, you know, you're gonna push me to where I'm gonna give you everything that I have in my tank to get where I want to be. I still push myself hard on a solo level, knowing that I give, you know, I write down whatever Parker has given me on the workout, and I take a picture of it and send it to him so he has it. So if he wants to log it, great, or if he just wants to look at it and see that my numbers are going up, he can or down or stand plateaued, he can see that. But it's different when I'm in here and in person. You're going, hey man, come on, what's going on? You know, or hey, we got this. It's always nice to have that extra little bit of motivation. So to me, I think I like it better having trainers. It's just not everybody can afford it because obviously with, you know, you guys love everybody, but you have to do it for a cost because you're doing this as a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
You love what you do, but you have to make money at it because this is what your time is, or else you're going to have to go find something else to feed your family.
Right.
So you have to get paid an amount for that. Not everybody can afford that, and that's where I've been lately for the last year, and I plan on working my way to where I can get back to doing that because I like that accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You holding me accountable holds me accountable even more. So I like it.
Well, I mean, that's even true for me as a trainer. It's like, I was like, I need to find someone who can lift when I lift. And I found a member that is stronger than me and can push me. And he's very intelligent. And he's pushed me when I lift with him because that's just the way it kind of works. You just, when you have someone standing over you that's, wow, he just did this weight, I've got to show up. You know, it pushes you. And it pushes you harder than when you work out on your own. It does for me.
Well, and I'll take it before Parker chimes in. I was just going to say, I'll take it even a step further that as a man that's just a couple of years older than me and that you can do more than I or do more than me, that motivates me to want to push myself even more and get to, well, I was like, if old man Matt can do that, I can do that. Eventually.
I hear that a lot. Right. Old man, man.
I'm only busting your onions on the show. I don't call you old man, Matt. But if Matt at his age, because you're, I think, 58. 58. So you're about a little over 3 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So I know that if you're hitting that, I have an opportunity of at least maybe pushing myself towards that goal. And mm-hmm. You guys, I think, already know what my goal is on bench. I'd like to hit that and then some. I don't know that I want to go up to John's 405 or anything. I don't know about that, but I would like to hit 315 and then see about 335 or 350 and then maybe mm-hmm. maybe stop. But it's a process. So you motivate me mm-hmm. because you're older than I am, mm-hmm. and I see what you're doing.
Well, if you start hitting those kind of numbers, I'm taking you to the next powerlifting meet. I can tell you that.
Well, we'll see where I get that. I got to get that elbow and that arm healed first. But yeah, we'll see about that.
100%.
Well, Matt, you're 30 years older than me, and you bench more than I do.
So. At the moment.
But you're working your way back up, aren't you?
I think I'm going to pass him. I'm going to try to do it.
Yeah, he'll catch me. He'll catch me.
He's not even going to have to try all that hard because he knows what it's like. I mean, because he was. What's your highest max ever on bench?
405.
405. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah,
been there before,
and you're not that much older, so you're still young enough to where you can get to that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean he doesn't have to get as heavy as me to bench that,
right?
So,
right,
because I think you did that. You were at 1.9 something.
Oh geez,
that was 1.9 multiplier.
Yeah,
I weighed like I weighed like 210, 208 when I did that.
Wow, good for you. I've been hovering between 205, 210, and I've been closer to 205.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we've said maybe 275. So I've got some work cut out for me, and I'm still pushing. It's slowly moving up, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
It's getting there. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you're never going to hear me brag in front of Parker. Because I know he'll be like, okay, you got something to show me? Throw some weight on there.
Right.
So. But no, I mean, that's kind of the human condition, though, right? Is that trainers or a workout partner, that human connection, having someone there guiding you, pushing you, you just, it's why, and we've talked about it before, it's why Olympic athletes have coaches. They know what to do.
Well, they know how to bring the most out of the person they're training, the athlete they're training, because they know what motivates each athlete, so they're pulling it out of them. And I know you guys know me well enough now that, I know that you guys know how to motivate me. So, you know, I think that's a good thing too.
One, it is my favorite thing when I hear somebody is going to come to a workout with a workout partner, whether it's a friend, family member, whether they're going to train together, they're going to come do a class together, they're just going to grab a workout because of that factor. The 8 a.m. HIIT class, the group circuit training that we do here at the gym mm-hmm. on Saturday mornings. We have that. People bring friends, couples come together, they work out together. It's so much more motivating for them to have somebody.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys that I'm training, his best friend also trains here. Well, they were talking about how they're going to find a day where they can train together, you know, nice. Start working out as partners.
Yeah.
And that always, I just really enjoy that because that's how, when I hear that, I hear, okay, these people are going to stick to it.
Yeah.
Because they've got somebody else that's got skin in the game with them, and they're going to be able to motivate each other and push each other. Their workouts are going to get better. They're going to do better outside of the gym. They're going to be more consistent on showing up because they know the other person's going to be there. It just, everything about it is better when people have that. And
Right.
It's just one word, accountability.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, there's also, I like the kind of the if it's a coach, because me and Parker have both done this with our clients, they'll pick up a weight and you're like, oh, come on. You can do more than that.
Oh, I've heard you. I've heard it.
Yeah, and or you know, if you have
that a in between sets, you just sneak a little more weight on the bar.
Yeah, 100% all the time.
I know he's done that to me.
Oh before. Yeah, 100%, 100%. And they don't. The best part is when they don't realize it and they start moving the weight. And goes, oh, wait a second, did you put more weight out here? I'm like, uh huh. You know.
Yeah, but you're doing it, aren't you?
Yeah, you're doing it. But you know, and or if you have someone who can just be. Who's stronger than you, and they're pushing away, it pushes you, you know. So it's the human connection, the accountability is very important when you're in a gym,
right?
So,
well, and before we go on to the next thing, I just wanted to regress just a little bit because I did find some more information on the emergence of structured fitness. I just wanted to read a quick little bit because we said it was. Greece, but this is, I think, added another couple of
structured
countries.
Fitness.
Yes, it says,
this would be like our workout plans.
Well, no, actually, this says no one knows exactly when structured exercise made a formal entry into the lifestyle of humans. The earliest records indicate that around 2000 BC, over 4,000 years ago, the Egyptians formally introduced structured acrobatics and fitness training. Egyptian culture saw acrobatics as both entertainment and sport, and its practitioners realized that to excel in this early form of physical performance, they had to train appropriately. This led to the introduction of structured fitness regimes or regimens involving body weight calisthenics. The Egyptians were not the only civilization to realize exercise was important, or as we might say today, exercise is medicine. During this time period, the same time period, it is believed the Chinese practiced a form of exercise called Kung Fu, not Kung Fu, but Kong, C-O-N-G, Kung Fu, that used a combination of breathing and formalized fluid movements.
Hmm. Did you say the Egyptians?
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
But I've also, in the same literature, it also said the Greeks, too, the Greek, you know, back in Greece. So
are they referring to form?
It
it feels like it alluded to how form, like doing these exercises, you would need some sort of structured purpose.
Let me read this next little bit, and maybe it'll shed some light on it. It says, while the Chinese and Egyptians are credited with introducing structured exercise, it wasn't until the Greeks introduced formalized training for competitive athletes that fitness finally received cultural acceptance.
Hmm.
At the peak of Greek civilization, fitness was seen as critical to martial prowess, i.e. fighting, restorative capability, i.e. healing of the body, mind, and soul, and educational, introduced into the post-secondary education system.
Okay.
There's truly nothing new under the sun, you know?
Man alive.
You read this stuff and you think, feel revolutionary to have some of these ideas, and you think, like, people 4,000 years ago are thinking of this.
They're talking about form.
You know, and some of those things you mentioned about, you know, health of the mind and some of those things that exercise can be used for. Yeah, I mean, all the same stuff that we say today.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, the same things need to be heard as needed to be heard back then.
It seems like it's been lost, you know.
I don't necessarily know that maybe everybody thinks of it as exercising of the mind, but I know that whenever I come in to the gym, and all I have to do is do, because Parker's written my workout for me, I come in and do, and it heightens the endorphins for sure and just makes you feel overall, because I don't know how many times, and you guys can attest to this too, I'm sure, as trainers that work out regularly, you've come into the gym and you're like, let's get through this. I just don't know that today is going to be that great of a workout. I'm not feeling it. Mm-hmm. And you come in, and whether it's you've pushed more weight than you thought you were going to push, or you actually had an incredibly great day and pushed near record amounts or close to, or you just came in and had an overall good workout, and at the end of it, you're like, man, I feel great. I had a great workout. I was not expecting myself to feel that way today.
That's happened.
And then you just, overall, it's that mind, I mean, it is healthy for your mind. It obviously for your body, but it just, when your mind's, you know, when you have a good workout and you can get through it, it feels amazing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Well, anything else that stuck out to you that you want to add to this history of gyms before we get off here, Brian?
You know, I apologize for not being able to dig into it as much as I wanted, but I think we had some good conversation over the whole thing today. I guess in summary, the way I look at it, and I'm sure you guys do too, is that for, like what you said just a minute ago, for as revolutionary as we think the gym process has been, it hasn't. The thing I think that's been revolutionary regarding is, you know, and they even touched on it in the article, is that eating correctly or the meal planning is, I think, maybe the most revolutionary part of this, that I think over the centuries of this process taking place that people have found that you can work out all you want, but if you're eating horribly, you're not going to get where you want to be. You have to, the process of this plus whatever you put in, it's a team game. They work hand in hand, and the more you perfect both of them, the better your results are going to be.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, 100%.
I agree. Well, glad you came on again, Brian. It's always a pleasure to have you.
And as always, I truly appreciate the invite, so thank you again. I always love hanging out with you guys.
Yeah.
And Matt, glad that you're back on here. Hopefully we're back to weekly.
At least have me till Easter. Easter I will be at a powerlifting meet.
So. Okay.
Is this number 3?
Yes.
And what's your goal on this one?
Well, I kind of want to hold on. The last 2 weeks I've been kind of railroaded, so I kind of want to get myself in here next week and give myself a couple of weeks, see how I feel. So I think I'm going to do a little more volume the next couple of weeks and see where my numbers are. And then all the 2 weeks prior, I'll hit some, start, lifting in competition style, do some heavy singles, heavy triples and stuff like that. And then I don't know. I want to at least stay where I'm at. I'd like to. My biggest challenge at the last meet is my eccentric is too slow, and I think if I learn to speed that up a little bit, I'll hit some heavier lifts.
Well, the good thing for you is that Easter is late this year, so it gives you a few more weeks to get in and do what you
need. I got a month.
Do. Yeah. Is this a Kansas meet or is this a Missouri meet?
I couldn't get into the Kansas.
You're coming over to a Missouri one?
No.
No?
No.
You're driving.
I'm going to Oklahoma. I know. It sucks. I was really bummed out. I couldn't believe it filled up. But, hey, it is what it is.
Well, good luck.
I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for episode 53, and we will be back with you guys next week for another episode.
All right, guys. Take care.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.